From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Director Billy Ray had been told to finish The Comey Rule, his two-part Showtime series about the troubled tenure of former FBI Director James Comey, so it would be ready to air before the election. Then someone at the highest levels of ViacomCBS pushed the series until after November 3rd. Ray wrote an apologetic letter explaining the change to his cast and crew, and that letter somehow leaked. The New York Times called to verify its contents, and Ray says he was shocked when the reporter asked him how he knew that Donald Trump personally had asked Viacom chair Shari Redstone to push the date.
I ran to my computer and I said, just stay on the phone with me. I'm going to send you the letter that I actually sent to my cast, which has no such assertion in it.
Ray talks about getting his pre-election air date back and explains why he decided to go for a less cartoonish version of the 45th president, giving Trump less Trumpy hair, along with better makeup and better suits. But first on the News Banter, COVID protocol improv. What could go wrong? Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my buddy in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So Hollywood is in a strange position. People are going back into production in a way that might make you nervous and make some people nervous. And at the same time, on the movie side, there is still no real sunshine at all. Starting with the production, there is definitely a really quickening pace of people going back into production. Just the other day, I was talking to a producer who has a series going back into production, a successful series. He sounded super nervous. They were going with the protocols such as they were, and the protocols weren't that much. The protocols, they didn't require people to quarantine. They were testing every couple of days. And this is the way things are right now that, you know, I said to him, that just sounds a bit like a recipe for an outbreak. And he agreed that it could be. People are being put at risk because on the one hand, those who can seem to go ahead mostly and do a pretty good set of protocols. On the other hand, we've seen, you know, we saw the Batman shutdown where you have to imagine that they had all the money in the world for that thing. And we have seen things that are all over the map in terms of what the practices are.
Yeah, a couple things going on here. First, production is back. I mean, if you look at the numbers, there was a 40% increase in shooting permit requests in Los Angeles from July to August. And I imagine that number is up even further in September. Second, it's all over the place what kind of protocols are being adhered to. I mean, there wasn't even a back-to-work agreement between the studios and the guilds until a week ago, and there are already things that are in production without a specific industry-wide guideline. So, you know, some companies are doing great. I mean, we've read stories about Netflix and how they have a specific territory by territory protocol that they're adhering to. Yet there was this Michael Bay movie for Netflix that had a do not work order slapped on it by the guilds because of allegedly some COVID violations on protocols. And there were others that defended Michael Bay's movie. But, you know, this is a sign that from big movies to small movies to talk shows to sitcoms, production is coming back and there's no clear guideline as to what people should be doing to prevent the spread of this virus.
Yes. I mean, there is not even clarity on what kinds of tests to use. I note in the story, in the Hollywood Reporter, Dr. Oz, who, you know, has his own dubious reputation, he just couldn't stand the nasal swabs. And there's this other test that works really well. And I wouldn't necessarily bank on what Dr. Oz says about anything medical based on some of his past, but there is not even consistency on the tests. And then there's a question of whether some of the positives are not just are either false or what one person called not useful, meaning maybe it's picking up small traces of virus and that's not important. It's so we're nowhere near where we need to be in knowledge. I will also note how expensive it is for some of these productions. You know, one of the producers of Jurassic World told my colleague that it cost Universal $3 million just for testing alone. And Universal went all out on Jurassic World. You know, they quarantined, they did constant testing, but that's just for the testing. Forget the quarantine cost of having a hotel where everyone was staying. you know, $3 million for Jurassic World is fine, but very few productions are Jurassic World. And if you're looking at a smaller indie film, this could be really crippling.
Yeah, that could be the entire budget. And that's where we're going to see where the prioritization comes, because if you're going to spend on this, it's going to impact the bottom line of a film or television. And it's just kind of the cost of doing business right now. And we're going to see where people are willing to put their money.
Yes, that's what we will see. Now, meanwhile, on the revenue side, it's not going well. I feel a little bit like we're telling this story. You know, we had the whole ridiculous thing with Tenet getting pushed. They finally opened it. Well, that worked so well that Disney has now pushed fall blockbusters, including Black Widow, including Steven Spielberg's West Side Story, Kenneth Branagh's Death on the Nile, all pushed. And that is really bad news for theater owners and the studios, of course. But it seems to be realistic. You know, certain filmmakers are saying, I don't want to be responsible for having a movie in theaters. Unlike Christopher Nolan, they don't want that responsibility until things are more, maybe there's a vaccine or things are, you know, it's clear that the protocols are effective.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Peele, who has the Candyman movie, and Kumail Nanjiani, who is one of the stars of Eternals, they both said that these pushes are great because they're not comfortable telling their fans to go see a movie in theaters. And we've talked about this on this show many times. People are uncomfortable. And yes, some will go to theaters, and Tenet did a number, and it's, you know, certain people were willing to go, but many were not. And a lot of these talents are very uncomfortable with this. And I think Disney is looking at this landscape. They're looking at the Tenet numbers, and they just said, you know what? We're just going to write off 2020. And yes, there's a couple small Fox movies that they keep on the schedule, but the big movies, the ones they actually care about, they are going to punt. They have the numbers from Tenet. They have their own internal numbers on Mulan and what that did on premium video on demand. And they've decided that that's not a model they want to pursue for some of these bigger movies. So they're just going to punt everything to 2021. And I think Warner's has some tough decisions to make with Dune and with Wonder Woman. And I wouldn't be surprised if the entire major studio tentpole slate just moves to next year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Bond. It's still sitting there in November, but how long can it stay? So, of course, this is really terrible for theater owners. We just had the owner of Regal talk about how uncertain times are going to be for them, trying to say that Tenet showed people want to go back to theaters, but there just isn't the capacity right now. They really would like New York to open, but that has not happened as we are speaking. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter.
Would you like to come over for dinner tonight?
Just the two of us?
Nobody gets treated as unfairly as I do. It's disgraceful.
Sir,
I need loyalty. I expect loyalty.
In the new Showtime series, The Comey Rule, Brendan Gleeson plays the newly inaugurated Donald Trump as he attempts to woo a very reluctant James Comey, played by Jeff Daniels. The first installment of the two-part series is an empathetic but unflinching look at the former FBI director's decision-making, bashed by the left and the right in the run-up to the 2016 election. The second part covers his experience in the aftermath of Donald Trump's inauguration. Comey offered his perspective on these events, not only in testimony before Congress, but in his book, A Higher Loyalty. He also talked to Billy Ray, who wrote and directed The Comey Rule. Ray's previous screenwriting credits include The Hunger Games and Captain Phillips. I asked him how he went about preparing to create this series. Did you sit with him? Did you chat with him endlessly? I mean, you have his book, obviously, but how much did you want to be with the man himself?
Well, his book was the jumping off point and an incredibly valuable one. But there was no way that I was going to take this on without getting the perspectives of lots of people who had lived this story. So, you know, I had to get on a plane and fly to DC and go meet with people who had been in the FBI during this period and people who had been in the DOJ, lots of reporters, people from the other side of the aisle. I wanted their perspectives too. That said, by far, the most important resource was, of course, Director Comey himself. He made himself available to me whenever I needed. There was a lot of email back and forth, lots of phone conversations, lots of sit downs. And what was so telling about them was he never tried to manipulate me. He never tried to spin me. He never tried to make himself look more noble or more righteous in any way. And he never, although he did see scripts ahead of shooting, he never once gave me a note on a script that was designed to buttress his own image, which told me a lot about his integrity.
To what degree can you say were the big players in this? I'm talking about people like Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, Sally Yates. To what extent did all of them sit down with you?
It would be better for me not to name who sat down with me.
I figured you'd say that, but I had to ask the question. Did some of them have constraints on had to be on the down low?
Sure, of course.
But you felt satisfied, I assume, that you got a multiplicity of perspectives on the thing.
Absolutely. And then, you know, the thing about Trump himself as a character, I did not ask for an interview with him. And there were many, many reasons for that. But the thing about Trump as a character is you look at all of the publicly available information about him. And then you ask yourself, does Director Comey's rendition of their one-on-one meetings comport with the Donald Trump that I see in the news every day? And the answer was absolutely yes.
Well, but briefly, why would you not ask Donald Trump? I mean, I'm assuming he'd say no, but on the other hand, we just saw what he did with Bob Woodward. So who's to say?
My sense was, and I ran this past my producers and my network, was that if we asked for his participation, he would ask to see the script. And that seemed like suicide to me.
And people around him, were they, some of them are on screen because you use news clips in the show, but
yes.
Were they open to talking to you? Did you want to talk to, I don't know, I'm randomly going to say Sarah Huckabee Sanders, but anybody like that?
My feeling about Sarah Sanders and some of the others in the Trump White House, they had demonstrated such a consistent record of lying in public. I didn't see the value of interviewing them when I knew that I could not believe anything they said. So in interviewing them, I would be giving them the opportunity to say later, Billy interviewed me and then didn't report what I told him. And that didn't seem like a good strategy.
So basically, let's stick with people who might be credible going in.
People that I know will be credible. And that's right. What I did.
Well, it really is. I think you said somewhere it was like two different things. The first part is the pre-election focus primarily on the Hillary Clinton emails and the buildup to what we all know James Comey did before the election. And then the second half is the aftermath of the inauguration, where you see this amazing portrayal of Brendan Gleeson. I have to say, it's striking. I don't know how he prepared for the role. I'm assuming he watched a ton of tape at least. But, you know, when you read about, you know, Michael Cohen talks about Donald Trump's humorlessness and so on, when you see it enacted, it's very different from reading about it. Can you give us insight into how that was worked out?
Sure. We are what we do. Our actions define us. And even more important than Donald Trump's words, which are not to be trusted, is his behavior, which tells you exactly who he is. I don't know how much tape Brendan looked at. I assume it's a lot. I know that he did quite a bit of work with a dialect coach who was quite good. But in terms of just how we were going to play Trump, Brendan and I felt from the start this was going to be the first and perhaps only dramatic interpretation of Donald Trump ever. As much as I love Alec Baldwin, we weren't doing a sketch. We were doing a dramatic interpretation of him as a character, and we were going to be the first. And that brought with it great responsibility, great opportunity, of course, but great responsibility. And we felt that the right way to go was to make him as uncartoonish as possible. We were going to make our Trump's hair less cartoonish than the real McCoy. We were going to make his makeup less cartoonish than Trump's is. We were going to make his suits fit better. We weren't going to do a comedic interpretation of his voice or his mannerisms. Brendan brings an incredible amount of talent to any part he plays and a great physical presence. He's very hulking in that way. And that was really right for Trump. But in terms of his voice, the first time I ever heard him do the Trump voice was on set about 3 minutes before his first take. Up until then, I hadn't heard him do it. I was trusting that he was going to get it right. He came to set for his first scene, dressed, made up, hair done, ready to go. I heard him rehearse it once. I looked at my cameraman and I thought, we're going to be great. this is going to work out great. He was absolutely dialed in. And you know, the performance speaks for itself.
He wasn't willing to do it right away.
No, it was more than not being willing to do it. He said no. We offered him the script and he said no. And we scrambled for about a month, maybe two, trying to talk ourselves into some other ideas. And Jeff Daniels was a very big part of all those conversations because he was really, really interested in who he was going to be, you know, slamming up against in that part. And then happily, my casting director, who is brilliant, her name is Sharon Bialy, she never stopped working Brendan's team and never let up on them. She kept saying, he should be doing this. He should be doing this. And at some point, they relented.
So they, I know that the real Jim Comey has blessed the movie, the portrayal. Anybody else weigh in at this point? Has anybody else seen it?
No one else in that world has seen the entire thing. A couple of the real life characters have seen some of the scenes in which they are depicted. But so far, Director Comey and his family are the only people in the movie who have seen the entire movie.
Coming up after a short break, Billy Ray talks about the letter he wrote to his cast after someone at ViacomCBS decided to delay his series until after Election Day. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. With voting in the 2020 election already underway, Showtime's two-part series, The Comey Rule, is a very timely show. And director Billy Ray always expected it to air before November 3rd. But over the summer, there were reports that ViacomCBS was delaying the series. Ray wrote a letter to his cast and crew expressing his disappointment and said he heard that the decision came from the very highest levels of the company. The delay struck Ray as strange since Showtime had given him a mandate to do whatever was necessary to deliver the series by May 15th. What happened to the mandate? Did you ever get an explanation?
I never did, and I don't need one because thank God they changed their minds and they moved up our date to where it should be, which is pre-election. You know, the reason I wrote that letter was because when you direct something, you are asking for the faith of hundreds of people in your cast and your crew. And you're saying to them, you know, believe in me, trust in me. There's a mountaintop over there and I'm going to lead us to it. I'm going to get us over there if you just keep pushing. And when people sign up for that, I think it's a sacred pledge and I take it really seriously. And I had told everybody on that show, cast and crew, yes, of course, we're airing before the election because that's what I had been told. And that was the reason to make the series. So to find out after we were done shooting that the network had changed its mind and was suddenly shying away. That was very disconcerting in the extreme. And I felt I had an obligation to write a letter to my cast to explain to them that I had failed, that I had not prevailed in this argument with the network, and that their faith in me had been misplaced. I felt I had to write it. I did not leak that letter to the New York Times. Someone else did. It had, you know, an impact. I think it's giving me way too much credit to think that a letter from, you know, little old me is going
to
make a company.
I've seen you say that and elsewhere, and I just have to say, well, you can say that, but I don't need to. That doesn't mean that I accept it.
That's very flattering, but I can't believe that I was able to back down a company the size of Viacom. I think they knew that it was the right thing to do to air it before the election. And I don't mean that in political terms. I mean, just as a matter of business.
Well, you asked to shop the project elsewhere, I read, which I assume is accurate.
And I was told no.
I mean, I think the quote that has appeared in print that of Shari Redstone, who controls Viacom CBS, the quote about her relationship with Donald Trump comes from me, an interview I did with her. So oh, wow. I know the illusion was that this decision had been made at the highest levels of and the name Redstone wasn't mentioned. And I'm assuming you're not going to be able to pinpoint where the highest level was in this interview. But do you have anything to tell me about that?
The only thing that I can add is that the morning after I sent that letter, I was awakened the next morning very early by a call from the New York Times. And the New York Times asked me if I had written that letter to my cast. And I confirmed that I had. And the New York Times said, "Where did you get your information that Donald Trump had pressured Shari Redstone into making this decision?" And I said, "I have no information in that regard." And I didn't say that in the letter. And the New York Times reporter then read me the letter, which someone had amended and had added a line saying that I had, supposedly from me, saying that Donald Trump had pressured Shari Redstone.
Goodness.
And I ran to my computer and I said, "Just stay on the phone with me. I'm going to send you the letter that I actually sent to my cast, which has no such assertion in it." And I sent it to her, and then I read it to her, and I made her read it back to me. And she said, "Okay." I said, "I don't know who put that into my letter, but that's not the letter I sent. Here's the letter I sent." And happily, we were able to squash that one.
So the answer to the question is whether you can pin the decision on an individual is?
The answer to that question is I don't know. I'm not trying to be coy with you. I think Showtime always knew that as a piece of business, this was a lot more valuable in late September than it would be in late November. I think they were always looking to change their mind again. And I think my letter gave them some cover. I think that's all I did.
And Jeff Daniels, I think, also said he would not promote the film, the series. So, you know, there's you open a big can of trouble.
There was that too. Yes, I think that was probably also a factor in their decision making.
So do you feel in light of all of that drama that they are marketing this as you would want them to? Because that would be another way to try to undercut the project if that were a desire at some level of this company.
No, I think once they made the move to September 27th, September 28th, failure was no longer an option. I think they knew this had to be a giant piece of business for them. They got a lot of light on them right now, and they're doing everything I could humanly ask them to do. The marketing and publicity, all of it has been top drawer.
So I noticed that Fox News reviewed the trailer for the series. One of the commentators said the promotional line for it should read, "Get your tinfoil hats ready. All the unproven lies you've seen on CNN and MSNBC come to life in one poorly produced, super scary film just for you on the far left." That's the trailer. But on the other hand, it's not as though if you watch this, clearly you are portraying Donald Trump as a Russia-compromised thug. So I don't know, is Fox News fair to say, I mean, if in their world that this is a terrible propaganda?
Well, of course that's unfair. You know, Fox News and I are both in the same business. We both make our living by doing dramatic interpretations of events. When I do it, it's called movies. When they do it, for some reason, it's called news. But, you know, I respect them, one storyteller to another. They know their audience.
Yeah. You know, you are putting yourself in the position in a way that Jim Comey was in, because Jim Comey, as you portray in the film, was in a no-win situation where he made a call that, you know, many people hate. I mean, maybe you don't take a position that this was the right call, I want to be clear, but you certainly spell out how difficult the options were for him. And when you portray him as I'd say, empathetic light that you do, you're already getting the blowback that from the left and the right, because a lot of people on the left are just as hostile to him as the people are on the right.
Everybody who experienced the 2016 election believes they know what happened. This series was an opportunity to take people inside the rooms where decisions were made that profoundly affected the American electoral experience. This is not something you could see on CNN or MSNBC or Fox News. This was actually what happened inside those rooms. We're going to shine a light on what Russia's impact was on the 2016 election and all sorts of factors that impacted the 2016 election and what the results of those factors were. In so doing, I think we are going to better prepare America for the vote they're about to take this election season. I think an unhappy side effect of that will be that a lot of people who have those preconceived notions are going to hate the movie without seeing it. By the way, I really have to stop calling it a movie. It's a series. That's an old habit.
It's almost like two movies is what it is.
Yeah. But yes, there will be some hate watching. And yes, there has already been some blowback. That's fine. That's fine. We told our story. I will stand behind it. And in that regard, we've already won.
Billy Ray is the writer and director of The Comey Rule on Showtime. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, God, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And that's The Business. Kevin Tidmarsh produced and edited today's program with help from Mario Diaz. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.